Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. This week, we continue our discussion with South Florida University's Professor Stan Russell. Stan is an expert on Japanese architecture and carpentry, having lived in Japan for 15 years. He's the founder of One Corner Architects, a full-service architectural design studio in Ybor City, Tampa, Florida. One Corner Architects specializes in creative contemporary design solutions for residential, commercial, and institutional projects. This week, Stan and I start off by discussing some of the notable buildings in Japanese history. Stan then lays out the origins and development of Japanese architecture, from prehistory, early Chinese influences, and development in feudal Japan. Stan then talks about how his experience with Japanese carpentry and architecture have influenced his architectural practice. We touch on Okinawan architecture briefly, before wrapping up with a few more thoughts on the Japan Summer Studio, which Stan has organized for his students at Miami University and South Florida University. To find out more about Professor Stan Russell, you can visit his website, www.stanleyrussellarchitect.com. That's www.stanleyrussellarchitect.com. If you're interested in finding out more about his architectural work and Japanese carpentry, you can find his contact information on the website. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Another one that really jumped out at me was, of course, because I'm into the karate, the martial arts, Mifune movie, you know, Seven Samurai and all that, was Himeji Castle, which I really, really enjoyed that. I believe it's an original castle. Some of the castles in Japan have been rebuilt.
Yeah. I think, as I recall my history, I think that's the only remaining original castle. Pretty sure.
And it's huge, and it's really neat to go through, and they have all the stuff on display. So if you're into the samurai stuff at all, I would definitely recommend that.
Yeah, that's a real high spot.
You know, what are some of the... How did all this develop? You know, we've been bouncing around to a few different places, probably bouncing around a few hundred years here and there naming these temples. You know, what was the progression of, you know, Japanese architecture? You know, what would it start? And I'm sure at a certain point there started to be some crossover between China, Korea, maybe some other places in Southeast Asia. Could you hit some of those real quick?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You can go way, way back, you know, where you can start at like, 1000 BC, and talk about the really early influences on Japanese architecture. There was the, I don't know if you remember, but there was the Jomon period, which was, I think, started about 5,000 years ago, that had a certain type of architecture that you can still see remnants of even in contemporary architecture, but certainly in the traditional architecture, the more recent traditional architecture.
Were those the ones that were then, sort of keyhole-shaped mounds?
The keyhole-shaped mounds came quite a bit later. Those are actually in AD. We're up to probably about 200 or 300 AD at that time.
So they
sort of had their influence as well. But the important thing about them was that because there are no real records existing from that time, you know, Japan didn't get its writing system until about 600.
Oh, wow.
So if you go back as far as 200 or 300, there are no written records of that time.
Right.
And the reason that those tombs were important was the relics that they found in the tombs were often, you know, there were these clay figurines and things that they would find, but they were often modeled after buildings. So you could actually,
wow, cool.
You can get a little clay figurine that's modeled exactly as a building was in 200 AD.
That's incredible.
Really, you know, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
if
see,
you're interested in that type of thing.
Yeah, definitely. See, architecture students, don't throw away your models. You'll
yeah,
never know.
Exactly. Put and make them out of clay and fire them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Put them in a time capsule. You'll be
you have
people studying them in centuries.
But it's really interesting to go all the way through and to see the different influences through history. And then you were mentioning the influences from the Asian mainland, which started happening around 600 or 700, and that's when the writing system came over as well from China.
Okay.
But you see a big shift in the architecture at that time as well. The early temple carpenters came over from Korea and China, and you know, they introduced a new way of building that hadn't been done in Japan until that time, and it had a pretty radical influence on the way that architecture was done after that point.
Well, what were some of the major? Was it just the woodworking, or the way of doing it, or was it the type of building or the style of building also?
Really, from China, it was the method of construction, and also the method of design, introducing a module, and introducing a system of measurement which hadn't been used until that time. And also, at the beginning, there weren't a lot of new tools that came along, but there were several new tools that came along at the same time, which kind of facilitated a type of working with the wood that hadn't been possible until that point, you know, types of joinery and things.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a combination of things. Overall, it was sort of a rational influence that China had.
Okay. So at a certain point, did the Japanese make this their own, or was it, because at a certain point, they sort of broke off, not broke off from China, but I think that Chinese influence started going away.
Yeah. Generally speaking, what happened, and, you know, throughout history in Japan, they had periods where they were really open and they were accepting a lot of influence from other places, and then they had other periods where the country was sort of closed.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a lot to do with what was happening politically in the country as well. But so during 7th, 8th century, and all the way actually up through the Heian period, which we're going up until I guess about the 12th century, then there was a lot of influence from the mainland, from China.
Mm-hmm.
And the architecture that was done during that time was very similar to Chinese architecture. There
okay.
wasn't much innovation that was done to it. And the temples that you see from that time are similar to the same period in China. But then when the country closed up again, you know, we're talking about sometime, you know, right after the 12th century when the,
mm-hmm.
the military sort of took over. When the country was closed, then these techniques and methods and things that they had brought over started to evolve according to, you know, all sorts of circumstances within Japan. So the things that they had brought over from China gradually changed and took on a more Japanese character.
You know, one of the things that I haven't been to mainland China. I was in Taiwan, and I was amazed about the difference between the temples there, which were Taoist temples that were just insanely elaborate, these bright colors.
Yeah, that's right.
Dragons and phoenixes and flames coming out of these things compared, and they may be old temples, but they've been kept up very, very pristinely, at least the rooftops were. But in Japan, you'll see that some of that paint has faded. It looks like it's been there, but that's deliberate, right?
Yeah. So apparently, if you went way back, the first sort of building models that were brought over from China, still, you know, they still use the bright colored paint even in Japan.
Mm.
So I guess, you know, if you saw the buildings at that time, they would have been red and orange and blue and all those things. But as you know, as the Japanese started to form sort of their own sensibility and taste, it was much more influenced by, well, Zen for one thing, the tea ceremony, wabi and sabi, and all these things talked about a much simpler sort of appreciation for nature and for materials in their natural form. And so I think, you know, even the early temples, once the color sort of faded on them, after this new sensibility had developed, they stopped, you know, they no longer repainted them. So it's sort of hard to see that, although you remember the shrine buildings still have pretty brightly colored, sort of an orange color to them.
I remember that, and I remember on part of the summer studio, we went to Mount Koya, I believe, if that's the name, and we stayed in a temple up there, and there was a very large, I'm probably using the wrong word here, but a pagoda that was bright white and bright orange. So that would have been one that still had that influence from the Chinese.
Yeah. And the shrines, still use that as a symbol. That bright orange color is sort of a symbol of the, you know, the gates of the shrines.
Okay. So, and that was the shrines are going to be the Buddhist and the temples are going to be the Shinto, or do I have that flipped?
Yeah, you have it the other way around.
Okay.
Yeah, the shrines are the Shinto and the temples are Buddhist.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATAC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATAC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATAC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show. How long were you in Japan total?
I was there almost 15 years.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time. So you got fluent in the language, I'm assuming.
Fairly well. It's already been a long time since I've come back, so I think I've lost a little bit. But
yeah. So how long have you been? So you were there. When did you go there? You said the 80s, but what's our approximate time?
Yeah, I was there. I landed there in 86.
86. So you came back in about 2000, 2001, something like that.
Okay. Exactly.
You know, have you had a chance to? You practice architecture in Japan. You were working on the carpentry, so you got a lot of skills. Unique skills, and then you came back here. You know, have you had a chance to use those, or is everybody coming to you and saying, hey, I need to build another McDonald's, you know, I don't care about any of that wabi-sabi stuff, you know?
Yeah. You know, actually, I did. I had some opportunities to use it, and I did a little bit. I built a house for my folks in Ohio, where I did some of the work on that. And I had some offers from some Japanese architects who were working over here at the time. And they wanted me, they couldn't find carpenters who could do the type of work that they wanted. So
right.
I got calls, but I didn't really want to pursue that. I was more interested at the time in getting into teaching.
Okay.
And so that was, making that transition was another huge transition for me.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I felt like I had to kind of, I had to shift my focus. So
mm-hmm.
I turned down some opportunities, but some other opportunities came along. So I think overall it worked out pretty well for me.
Yeah. Sounds like it. Well, you came to Miami in what, 2004 to 2005?
Yeah, about like that. Maybe 2003. I think I was there for three or four years.
Okay, I took your class, I think, the following year, so that's why I was a year behind.
Yeah.
How did you talk to those guys into offering that class and doing the summer studio? And what was the idea behind the summer studio?
Well, when I went out to Miami, the main way I pitched myself was my experience in Japan. So I think when they decided to hire me as an adjunct faculty, that was kind of what they had in mind as well. They thought that.
Wow.
They had a professor there before, a few years before I came, who became kind of famous for her class. I think she taught a class on Asian or Japanese architecture.
Okay.
And since she wasn't there anymore, that had sort of opened up for a few years. So I think they were trying to look to revive that maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just kind of came along at the right time.
Yeah, well, it definitely came around at the right time for me. I had decided to do my thesis project on Okinawan architecture, and then after that, I saw that your class was offered. I'm like, well, I'm going into that for sure.
That all worked out well.
And then I found out you made the announcement about the summer studio program,
uh-huh.
And the same day, I got a call from my karate teacher wanting to know if I wanted to go to Okinawa, and it happened to be at that it was the same day.
Oh, wow.
In fact, he called me and goes, Mr. England. I'm like, oh, yes, sir. How would you like to go to Okinawa? And I'm like, well, I'm already going to Japan, so I guess I can swing on by. And so it worked out really perfectly.
Okinawan architecture is interesting, too. Did you find that when you went out there?
Yeah,
you did see it a little different.
I definitely did. So one of the big differences is it had a much heavier Chinese influence than mainland Japan, or at least a later influence. For example, if you look at Shuri Castle, which was destroyed during World War II, but they rebuilt it and did a really nice job, especially on the main hall, did a very accurate job because they had architectural and historical surveys about this exact sizes and everything, so they're able to build from those plans. So it looks a lot like the Forbidden City, and because Okinawa was a tributary state to China, and there's also a few castles in Korea that are very similar, because they're trying to make like a miniature version of the Emperor's Palace in China.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that I mentioned were they have the walls around everything, and the himpun, which is it has a bunch of different meanings. The first is like a practical application. So if you have this wall around your house to stop it from being blown down by the typhoon, well, you have to get in that wall. So you can't just have an open gate because the wind's just going to come in and blow your house down. So they'd have this stone wall set in, about 5 or 6 feet, so that wind would have a windbreak.
Right.
And that also became a symbolic thing. So this himpun is also supposed to stop evil spirits from coming in,
uh-huh.
offered more privacy to the house. So sort of this multiple layer of there's a practical application, there's a symbolic application, and maybe there's a couple other things as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the houses there are interesting too because they're so open. The Okinawan climate obviously is a really warm climate, sort of tropical climate.
Oh, yeah.
So the houses are much more open, even more so than on Honshu, on the main section of Japan. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. It was really fun going there. And the other thing I like to do was go and explore the jungle and find these old castles that you can still find out there.
Yeah.
And kind of check all these different ones off my list because okay, I'm the karate and and martial arts dork, so I've got to go look for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, right.
Mowari no hito ni sa wo sukete imasen ka? Anata no karada wa kyusoku wo hitsuyou to shite imasen ka? Sports massage, kenkou no specialist, Medical Resort ATAC wo ichido torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC de wa okyaku sama no karada ni awasaita massage wo okunaimasu. Mata, ATAC no sanso shitsu ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. Taisha koujo, kega no soki kaifuki ni kikimasu. Junansei wo takameru, stretching course ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC wa pro chimu, Rukyu Golden Kings, FC Rukyu, soshite Rukyu Corazon no senshu mo ryo shite masu. Zehi ichido goraiten kudasai. Open, getsuyobi kara, doyobi made, Okinawa ken, Naha shi, Oroku, 1-28 no 30. Denwa bango, 098-859-1890. Homepage mo cheko shite mite kudasai. www.sanso-atac.com. www.sanso-atac.com. Ego, Portugalgo, Spengo, Nihongo ga hanaseru staff ga imasu. So, what are you working on now? Are you still doing a little bit of the Japanese architecture? Have you gotten into something else? What is the what's been catching your interest lately?
Well, there'll always be a lot of influence from the experience that I've had in Japan and continue to have with my classes and taking trips there with students. So I think that'll always influence it. It's not real obvious. I'm not designing traditional buildings or anything, but
right.
Maybe sort of finding ways in contemporary architecture to use some of the ideas that the vernacular architecture had. So, yeah, I do try to do that. The projects that I'm involved with now, I have some residential projects in the area, in the Tampa area, that mm-hmm. I'm working on. Talk of various other things too, but you know how the architecture field is. If you hear talk about 10 projects, or maybe one that actually becomes a project, so
maybe
that sort
one.
Of thing, maybe, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, but I do have my practice open as well as teaching.
That's great. And you've been doing, and you're also teaching at the USF, and you've been able to do the, you said you're doing the Japanese architecture class. Have you been able to do the summer studio program in the last few years?
I did. I teach the Japanese architecture class, and I did the summer studio a couple of years here.
Mm-hmm.
What I've been doing more recently is during the semester in the fall, I've been taking a group over for a shorter period. We just go over for a couple of weeks. And we collaborate with a university, Kanagawa University in Yokohama,
mm-hmm.
Which is really great. The students get to go over and work with Japanese students. And
right.
The whole, the whole cultural exchange thing, I think, is really fun for them and eye-opening. So I've been doing that more so than the summer studio. Although this year I'm taking a group of students to Europe, believe it or not. So
wow,
I am doing a summer studio this year.
Well, your Japanese isn't going to come in handy at all there. Do you speak French
no,
or German
it's not.
Or something?
I don't think I'm going to be able to use it at all.
Well, that's very cool. What's going on with the Europe trip? Why the changing continents all of a sudden?
I just thought it'd be interesting. It's been a long time since I've had an extended trip in Europe, mm-hmm. and there's been a lot done there and a lot of really significant things done there since I was there last. So I just kind of figured it was time to do that again, sort of refresh myself a little bit
okay.
on European architecture.
Nice.
So it's just a good opportunity.
Great, great. So I gotta ask, what do the Japanese carpenters think of the American carpenters?
wow, that's, I'm not sure they think about it very much. They're probably kind of curious.
That's more insulting than anything.
they're probably they're kind of curious about what happens in other countries. And when I was working with the carpenter I worked with at the construction side, we'd kind of sit around at break times and stuff and talk. And they would ask me a lot of questions about how things are done in the States. But beyond that, I don't think there's a lot of they don't have a lot of information about it, and I don't think they probably have an attitude one way or the other. Although what they see more, the influence they see from the States is 2x4 construction. So I think and the reputation of 2x4 is that you don't really need to know, you don't have to have many skills to be able to do 2x4 construction. So
Right.
in that respect, I think they kind of know that. But they're also somewhat familiar with the old methods, the old European methods that even came over to the States, the timber framing methods, which are much closer to what they do. So,
Sure, if you go back to a couple hundred years, the log cabin that Abe Lincoln was living in, I mean, they that was put together by joiners, so that's probably a lot similar.
they still had people who could cut joints and that sort of thing and had good tools. So,
Sure.
yeah,
Very cool.
various things.
All right, Stan, that's great. Anything else to add? Anything we missed, or any points on Japanese architecture, or anything you're working on now? Hey, go ahead and give your studio a plug.
I'm located in Ybor City in Tampa, and definitely, I think Nate, are you're gonna include a link to the website
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to
on
put
the
a
blog? Okay.
exactly.
So yeah, there's contact information on the website and address and all that sort of thing. So really, if anybody's listening, I'd love to hear from you if you're interested in what we talked about today.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'm definitely interested, and I'm sure you're going to have some people that are going to contact you.
Great.
All right,
Great.
Stan. Anything else we
Well,
missed?
thanks a lot. No, I think we pretty much covered it. Those were good questions. I
All
think we
right.
covered a lot of territory.
All right, very good. And if we missed anything, I guess, we can have you back. That's all for our time with Professor Stan Russell. Thanks again to Stan for taking time to talk with us and for being such a huge influence on hundreds of architecture students over the years. To find out more about University of South Florida Associate Professor Stan Russell, Japanese Carpentry, and his office, One Corner Architects, you can visit his website at www.stanleyrussellarchitect.com. That's www.stanleyrussellarchitect.com. If you're interested in finding out more about his architectural work and Japanese carpentry, you can find his contact information on the website. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Nihidibiru and Matayat. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.